It's time to travel to the next room with Jane Asher, an exploration of the bigger picture surrounding life on Earth and what follows. Now, here's your host, Jane Asher, on Empower Radio.
Happy Monday. It's always a good day when I can step out into my little studio. My puppy is curled up down by my feet. We had a little bit of a different start to our day because she went to have a little spa day because her nails needed to be groomed and Aunt Gail and Uncle George are coming to visit, so she needed to smell really good. So she's tuckered out because she gets all anxious when she has to go and go somewhere strange or whatever. But she's curled up, ready to roll today with this new interview. Welcome to the next room. My guest today is Heath Armstrong. Now, I have to give a shout out to Sarah Seidelman because I love Sarah. Sarah's just one of the grooviest, just most genuine, authentic, amazing women that I've had the opportunity to know for the past couple of years. And she said, Jane, you've got to have Heath on your show. You're just going to love him. So I get this great little happy package in the mail, and it's Sarah's deck of cards, which I love. How good are you willing to let it get? I read her book daily. So she sends me a deck of her cards, which I was so grateful. And then I get this other cool deck of cards, and it's called Sweet Ass Affirmations, Motivation for Your Creative Maniac Mind. I started giggling and laughing. I open up the deck. I shuffle them, let one fall out at me, which I'm looking at right now. So today, I am the hero in my own video game. Okay. I'm leveling up. It says I'm gaining superpowers. This is so good. I'm busting through brick walls and smashing the skulls of fear gremlins around every corner. I love this deck. Welcome to the show, my friend, my new friend, Heath Armstrong. It's good to have you here.
Thank you so much. It's always amazing to be able to step into a room or a conversation or, as you say, the next door and talk about something deep and meaningful. So I appreciate your time and energy.
Well, I'm glad to have you here. Now, tell me about, you have a really interesting story where you paid off all your debt, you quit your job, and you just sort of like did a major pivot in life from what everybody is always telling you you should do, you know, buy the house, buy the car, you know, do this, do that. And you decided to do something completely random and different. How did that come to be?
Well, to start, I was doing everything that I was taught to do. Essentially, we're sort of born into this world and all these layers are stacked upon us by marketing and consumerism and politics and religions and parents and teachers. And none of them really come into it meaning harm. But what happens is we get all these layers of other people's ideas of what we should be on us. And then we kind of go down that path. And I just came to a point where I really felt like I was completely dead internally. And I think when you look at death, it's sort of, most people think, oh, physical death, that's the aspect. But I also really heavily draw into mental death because while I did have a lot of different interactions with physical death growing up, the harshest one for me was a series, and it could have been built off of all those experiences of physical death, I guess. But it was that realization that I had done everything that I possibly could to build this life. And then I ended up in this position where essentially I had been paying attention so little that I didn't realize that I had a job that I hated and a relationship that I really wasn't healthy in and a body I didn't really care for or like. And I was addicted to a bunch of things to provide me with thrills so that I could really forget about my lack of sustainable happiness. And then in that moment, I was pretty ripe for a sledgehammer to the face from the universe. And that sledgehammer sort of showed up as an incident where I woke up completely. I don't know how long I'd been out of consciousness, but I woke up on my garage floor with a nosebleed and an empty bottle of whiskey very close to my hand, if not touching it. And my car was still parked in the front yard of this residential neighborhood running. And I had no recollection of the past in 24 hours. I remembered where I had started, but I don't know what I got into or where I was and why I thought it would be a good idea to drive home. But it was a mental death for me. It was a do I even want to be here anymore? And I think that was one of the first seeds that kind of spiraled me into a deep exploration of who I truly am and what it means to be alive.
Holy cow. How old were you when this occurred?
It was 2011, so I was probably like 24.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's quite a wake. Right. Yeah, that's quite a wake up call. I mean, you know, obviously,
yeah, 10 years ago.
Yeah, obviously, boy, that is just deep. Where you are not happy. I mean, that's what that sounds like—just pure agony. So, okay, so you wake up. You're like, was it that moment that you're like, oh my God, I've got to make a change here, or I'm going to kill myself?
Yeah, I definitely felt like I was going to die if I didn't make changes. But it actually took me 3 more solid years of complete struggle and abuse of drugs and alcoholism before I actually was able to overcome. And I think one of the biggest lessons I learned in that process was you can't just go out and like look at the sun and spend time in nature and smile and like hide all of the anger and the fear and the shame that's in your body and expect to make a mass transformation. I had to learn how to really like be intensely in pain and in fear and like feeling all of that anger and that rage and not having any idea where it was going to lead me, but knowing that as I was feeling that death in a way that it was releasing from me and creating space. And I spent last summer with a good couple weeks with this incredible Mayan Oracle. He was, I don't know, the word guru is kind of weird for me, but he feels like one of these people that has showed up my life to be a type of spiritual guru. And he's just one of the most remarkable people I ever met. And in some of this ceremony with him, a medicine ceremony, he came up to me afterwards and he was like, I just watched just generations of pain and anger and fear that you had been processing for a long time, but it hadn't actually released, come out of your body and go up to the sky over the past couple hours. And I connected all those dots back to those incidences of trying to figure out who I was. And yeah, essentially I had another rock bottom moment 3 years later. And then all of these magical people started appearing in my life. And the difference was that I started paying attention to that as opposed to ignoring it and thinking it wasn't for me. And I started listening to what they had to say. And I do think it was one of my early interactions with angels. I mean, I'm empathetic. And from a young age, I've always had a relationship with the other realms or worlds or spirits. They've always kind of flirted and played with me in a way that it didn't seem like was happening with other people. But I didn't understand what any of it meant until these people started showing up in my life and teaching me. And then I was able to make some pretty rapid transitions that came with my ability to trust and rediscover love for myself, which then allowed me to sort of do that and create things that would help others rediscover love for themselves as well in the future.
Mm. Man, this is good. Boy, you really do have to feel all the feels. I really love that. You know, you can't shrug it off. You have to go through the pain to get to that ultimate spot, that sweet spot of pleasure. You know, you got to feel all the feels. So it was almost like a rebirth for you.
Yeah, it's like Rise of the Phoenix. I mean, what life isn't really about what happens to you, right? It's not about the beauty that happens, and it's not about the BS or the harsh stuff that happens. Life is really about how you choose to react when it happens.
Yes.
And from the first time that you arrive through the portal of your mother or whatever magical place that we arrive from, you know, death has really been the angel. It has been the North Star. It has been the guru. But those layers I talked about earlier kind of keep us, they put this wall in between us that keeps us from being able to see it. And so I feel like it's this constant progress of peeling those layers back and then being aware of death being there and teaching you. I mean, death really is the only constant reminder of how beautiful, fragile, and magical life really is in every moment. And if we can contemplate and understand death in those moments, then death really does encourage us to live with pure intent and more purpose. It reminds us of why we are alive and having this experience in the first place. So as we talked about Sarah earlier and her question of how good are you willing to let it get, I often say to myself, how long will you wait until you allow death to become your guide, your elder, your wisdom, and your teacher? Because it really is all of the above.
Damn, dude. You are. I'm writing this stuff down because this is really, really quite poignant. And you're right. Death. I think death is beautiful because it does teach us how to live more richly. And it is the one thing that no one can escape. You can't buy yourself out of it. And depending on what you think is next, you know, it's really all about the experience that we're having in this moment right now.
I know. It's so beautiful. And it's like chaotic and beautiful in all of the most amazing ways at once. It's a collective thing, right? I mean, in one breath, everything that we know in life can transform through death. It means walking through the next door, I truly believe, because of interactions that I've had in deep dream states or plant medicine ceremonies or some strange things that happened to me growing up, you know, waking up out of paralysis, like sleep states, and having been approached by entities and things like that I didn't understand. And I thought I was going crazy and stuff. I really do feel like I've slipped into those realms a few times. And even being on, like, I do a lot of mountain climbing, and being up on Mount Rainier and outside of Seattle and having a climbing partner fall into a crevasse when you're crossing that metal ladder that goes across this massive crack in the glacier. And if you fall, you know, you got three people on the rope, and if the other two aren't anchoring, like, you're all going to die. And I had a guy in the middle of our team fall in, and I remember laying there for like an hour and a half and thinking, I'm holding my body weight. If the climbing partner on the end can't rig up a system to get this guy out, like, what do you have? You have two choices. You cut him loose to try to save yourselves, or you all go down. And luckily he was able, and he was just an amazing, you know, guide, and he was able to rig something up and pull this guy out. But it was like these little incidences. It reminds me, like, is it worth waiting until someone we know or loved one passes, or until we have a near-death experience to occur before we start living our moments in loving awareness? Mm. And how would the way that we interact in these moments with our friends and our family, like, say, with your mother, how would the way that you interact with your mother change if you knew that it would be the last time you ever saw her? How much more open would your heart be? How much more love and compassion would you be sharing with her? How would the topics of your conversations change, right? That's such a simple thing. And if you knew you were going to pass yourself, how would it affect your needs and your wants? How would it affect the way that you spend your time? And how would your priorities change? Because every interaction of each moment is a direct impact on the purpose and passion that you bring to this world. And death is really what makes life precious, because if we didn't have it, what would be the purpose? Mm-hmm. Like, what would be the purpose of life? It would just be this kind of like mundane, purposeless thing. There'd be no sentiment. So it's what makes life precious.
Heath, what do you think is next? The name of this show is The Next Room. And a good friend of mine, Budgie, years ago had said, Janie, I just think that, you know, when we leave, we, you know, shed the meat suit and we just go into the next room. What do you feel is next, or hope, or, you know, I don't know. Some people feel like they know, some feel like they have an intuition of it.
Yeah, I feel like there is something really beautiful with it's just like, and I don't mean to go into plant medicine realms or anything like that. And by mentioning plant medicine, I want everyone to really know that it is a space that if you ever end up in it, you need to make sure you are with the right people and the right shamans and the right space, because it's extremely, extremely important. But meeting Mother Ayahuasca, and then also having incidences in other areas where, I mean, I've done this weird thing throughout my life where I get really nervous and I don't know what it is. And then I pass out without knowing that it's coming. And it just happens randomly. And I'm kind of navigating that. But every time that happens, I go somewhere. And I always remember like interacting and like being with these, just, it feels like home, right? It feels like you're on the lotus flower, like looking down over all things love. And I can't ever remember as soon as I pop back into this physical world. It's almost like I have this hard drive that's not big enough to download all the information that I was just interacting with in those realms. But I have had enough of those interactions to know that it feels very warm and very light, and that we honestly, I think, have been people who have chosen to come into this existence to do something with our humanness, right? Like with our interaction with nature, because we are of nature. And I don't know, like, the only thing I really know in life is that I don't know anything, but I do truly trust in I have been able to relieve so much stress and anxiety and pain throughout my life by understanding that this deep unconditional love is not just something that we look for in this physical world on earth, but it's all around us and it's always protecting us.
Mm. Heath Armstrong is my guest today. He's a creator of Rage Create. You can go to ragecreate.com, or you can just simply go to heatharmstrong.com and read all about this extremely fascinating young man. Before we started recording, you were telling me that you're creating a couple new things. What are you doing now?
Yeah, I actually am doing, I just finished the second Sweet Ass Affirmations deck.
Awesome.
Which I didn't mention to you, but it's quite fantastic. And then, of course, putting up new websites for Rage Create and my personal brand. But I'm writing a book. I'm doing so many things. It's like Sarah, like so many different projects. But probably the most important thing that I'm doing right now is working with an organization in Africa, which I've fallen in love with deeply. And yeah, it's been a blessing.
Well, tell me about it. What are you doing with this organization in Africa? What's the name of it?
It's Help Uganda. And I ended up in, it's kind of an issue. I'll try to peel this down to a really quick story. In 2009, I got in an airplane to go interview for a job to be on, like, work on oil riggers, like oil tankers in the Gulf, because I was going to school for something that I went to school and worked in the concrete construction industry for 10 years. Which is what led me to the moment that I talked about earlier. And I met a guy on the plane who had just been extradited from Rwanda, and he got on the plane and he sat next to me. I didn't know anything about him, but I was like, oh, please don't sit next to me. This dude looks crazy. And he sits down, and he was the first person ever to say to me, he started asking me about myself and what I was doing. And I told him, and he was like, well, do you love it? And I was like, what? Who, like, what do you mean do I love it? And then I got into some deep conversation with him, and he was like, yeah, you know, when I was younger, I couldn't really understand the whole like area that I was growing up with in Nashville. And I just felt like called to Africa. And so I went, and I've been fighting for gender equality for years. And the last 4 months, the Rwandan, I don't know who it was exactly, but they were picking him up and imprisoning him every day. And he had to have his wife smuggled out of Uganda. He'd be a great person for you to talk to, actually, but he got out, and it was the first time he was going to reunite with his wife. He happened to sit next to me on this plane.
Wow.
Which is kind of amazing. And he had these necklaces and bracelets with him that were made out of paper that looked unbelievable. It weren't, it's like not, you would think that they were like granite or quartz, like some sort of amazing gem, essentially jade maybe. And I bought a couple of them off of him because the women, like the mothers that were victims of the genocide out there, made them. And that's how they brought them to other places and sold them to raise money to like run water and things like that. And, 2017, like 8 years later, I find myself coming back from Africa with like duffel bags full of this type of jewelry.
Wow.
Because somehow that seed had like opened up in my life, and people
sure.
showed up in my life. And then I ended up out there doing similar things, working within similar projects. And it was like this weird deja vu, but at the same time, like, oh, all that just came around full circle. But really there's an amazing retired Navy nurse that I have to give her all the credit, because I really just try to be of service to her in whatever way I can. But she sets up disaster relief programs all over the world. And this actually project has taught me more about death than probably anything else. It's just, it's such a different take when you're out in places like Uganda, you know, in Misese, and you learn so much, and it's so humbling. And we have a school with about 500 children that essentially wouldn't have gotten into government schools or couldn't afford particular things, and Gene has really grown this from like a small little orphanage to a school with 500 kids, and the goal is to, you know, get them all sponsored and get them clothes and food and get them real educations all the way through secondary school, and then turn that into them actually going into the economy locally and creating businesses and creating businesses within the tech industry and trying to sustain actual opportunity and joy in life for these children. So I've just been working a lot with the sponsorship side of things and the digital education side of it. It's been quite life-changing.
I love it. I love it. We don't know one another, but I'm a huge, boy, I've been on a lot of humanitarian missions, and you're singing my song, Heath Armstrong. So I want to know more about that, because I have someone to connect you with that I just have a feeling. I've got a good feeling about this. Heath Armstrong's my guest today, and boy, I am just so grateful to Sarah that she would connect us. She knows me well enough to know that I'm just sitting here and I feel very light, and I feel very uplifted, and I feel like you were put here for a very special reason, and I love that you're living your truth. It sounds to me like you are just doing exactly what you're supposed to be doing before you got away from doing what everyone thought you should be doing. You're now living. That's good.
Yes. Yeah, I appreciate that.
Well, I'm really grateful you would take the time to come on the show. So we have a second deck, which means I need to order that. And can we do that just through your website, or is it through Amazon? How do you do that?
I'm actually getting ready to put together a crowdfunding campaign to get the first round printed. So that'll be through Kickstarter, but it will be on our website at ragecrate.com when that happens, probably within the next 6 weeks, if I can overcome all the resistance gremlins that are attacking me and kind of unchunk the task. But it's coming, and it's a really fun project, and the deck came together nicely.
That's so funny. Mamba just growled when you said resistance gremlins, because that's, you know, for any creative, that resistance thing, it's like, oh, please, I am going to kick your fanny today. Watch me. And that's what you have to do. You have to go for it. You just have to, you know, beat it back. So, well, good.
Yeah, it's something that I try to do in all of my work, is personify resistance, because then you see that it's actually not you. It's something external. And resistance really is something that is trying to keep you from creating. And the whole point of life is to be creative. If you're not creating, you're dying, essentially. Mm. And resistance, by contemplating death, it's very similar to contemplating how resistance is right next to you all the time. It's like, no, you're just here to trick me into trying to not do anything before, I make friends and best friends with my death. I mean, life really is a constant series of letting go and surrendering until the greatest let go or surrender of all, right? And resistance doesn't want us to really make progress in any of those aspects.
The one dance we do alone. Wow. Very cool. Well, I am so happy to have you on. I do want to ask you a quick question. What is mind poo?
Mind poo is resistance. It's procrastination.
I love it.
It's the toxic, the nature of what tries to keep you from your highest self. And I don't know. I think if you live each day as if it were your last, like the topic that we've been talking about.
Yes.
And you really allow that to help you contemplate how your experience will change. You're probably not going to complain about the weather. You're not going to whine about your job. You're not going to think things like, why can't I just get a break? Instead, you're going to be out raging in your undies in the middle of a rainstorm, climbing up an apple tree and shedding tears to the beauty of the natural world. You'll be yelling cowabunga as you swing down from a branch into the puddle of mud below you. And you're not going to be feeling resentful or entitled. You're going to be appreciative and full of love. And the closer you are to understanding resistance and hanging out with your homie death, the more your moments are going to come alive. And that's what living's all about.
Right on. Well, you did something that happens to me quite frequently when I am faced with just utter beauty, and that is I well up. And so I consider this such an honor. So thank you for that. That's where I know that I'm on task, that I'm being led, right? So just a completely awesome interview. Thank you for coming on the show. I want you to come back. And let's keep in touch. You know, let me know what I can do to help you to further help Uganda, or to help you with your sweet ass affirmations, or whatever you need. I want you to know that you can pick up the phone and give me a call.
Oh, that means the world to me. And thank you so much. And as my great spiritual teacher would say, hokahe, or, today is a good day to die. And also Matiosh, which is great deep gratitude, essentially. So I'm very appreciative, and my heart is very wide open and appreciative of you. So thank you.
Awesome. My guest, Heath Armstrong, creator of RageCreate.com. You can go to HeathArmstrong.com and see what this remarkable young man is up to. He's here to shake the tree and knock down the apples as he swings into a mud puddle. Of course, he said it a lot more eloquently than I did, but you can hear what he's all about. So a great interview. Thank you so much. And I'll be back next week on The Next Room.
Join Jane again next week for The Next Room on Empower Radio as she examines the beliefs, traditions, and personal evidence of connection with those who have moved on to the next room.